With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This is it! The time has come!
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down!
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that!
On Talk Sport.
You're listening to Fight Night with me, Gareth A. Davies. It's the podcast of the Fight Night for Talk Sport. Spencer Oliver is joining me on the show tonight, and he's great value as always. A massive bumper show to start the year. We start this week with an intro to two weight world champion Carl Frampton, who fights Jamel Herring in just a few weeks' time, looking to win a third world title in a different weight category when he challenges Herring for the WBO title. Here's what the Northern Irishman had to tell me.
Spence was saying at the top of the show, and I completely agree, you've stuck yourself out there again. You want this world title in a third weight division. How's the camp going? And how are you going to beat this guy, Jamel Herring?
Well, first of all, the camp's going very well. No complaints coming from me. I feel like I'm where I need to be. I've been happy with how I've been performing and sparring. Jamie and Nigel Travis have been happy with my sparring as well. I feel like I'm like a fine wine. I feel like I'm getting a wee bit better with age. I just done a PB floor presser the other day in the gym. So I'm lifting more than ever done. All drug free, by the way, as well. So I'm in a good place, and I'm ready. I'm ready for this fight.
I've got them Twitter people tonight saying, is Gareth on something? No, I'm just excited to be back and excited that we've got so many great fights coming up, and yours is one of them. It's going to be in London, Carl. Do you know where it is yet?
No, I don't know. So the last I heard was they were, I think they're being optimistic. I think they're hoping for some sort of a small crowd, 500 people maybe. And if they can do that, they would put it in the copper box, I'm hearing. If not, I think the BT Studios. But again, I feel like that's being optimistic. I feel like it's just going to be in the BT Studios, if I.
Carl, your career started back in 2009. You've had an incredible career winning super bantamweight world titles, featherweight world titles. You're now up at super featherweight. This guy is tall. He's a slick southpaw. He's tough. Do you feel now, Carl, at this age, 33 years of age, do you feel that this is your last shot at the big time if it doesn't go right for you? And are you confident going into this one against this challenger, this champion?
Yeah, look, I think you're right. Look, I'm a realist, Spencer, and it is my last shot. You know, I can't, if I don't beat Jamel Herring, there's not going to be another opportunity for me arising. So I intend to do that. I intend to go in and put everything on the line and do whatever it takes to win the fight. And I'm really confident. I just have this real feeling of belief that I'm going to win this fight. I don't know what it is. I'm not overconfident. I'm not like writing this guy off. I know it's going to be a hard fight, a really hard fight, but I'm full of confidence right now. And I feel like, I just feel like it's going to happen, and I'm going to win. And I feel like I'll win convincingly as well.
When you fought Darren Trainor, and it was a difficult fight because it was his world title fight back in August, really, you know, against a guy, everyone was saying, oh, Carl wins this easily. Has it helped you? I suspect if it is at the Copper Box and it's February the 27th, it may be very difficult to get a crowd in. So having that fight against Trainer without a crowd there, and it is different, Carl. Carl, I've been there on some massive, Spencer too, on some massive nights in Belfast, in Manchester, in Las Vegas, on the East Coast of America, the biggest nights possible, that helped you maybe mentally going into a fight where it's a huge fight for you, but there may be no crowd there.
Yeah, I think so. I think I needed that fight. If I'd have been going in blind and not really knowing what it was going to be like fighting with no crowd, no atmosphere. For the Trainer fight, for example, I went into the fight in my head thinking, don't get complacent here. Mm. But I did get complacent. And I think part of that was down to the lack of atmosphere, but it was also down to, no disrespect to Darren Trainer, the level of opposition. And it was hard for me to get out of second gear. Now, Jamel Herring is a completely different fighter than Darren Trainer. It's going to be, you know, it's a world title fight for me. This is an absolutely huge fight, a chance for me to go down in history as a three-weight world champion. So I don't think it's going to be the same, but I'm glad I had that experience with Darren Trainer. But I'm going to be up for this fight, whether there's 500 people or 5 people here, it won't matter to me. And I don't think it's going to affect my performance.
Yeah, Cole, how do you win this fight against Herring? You know, he's a tall southpaw. We've seen he likes to throw, switch it up to the body, to the head. Do you think having home advantage is going to be a big time in your favour? And also, you've got that amateur pedigree as well, where you're used to fighting in front of no crowds. You know, you've done that many a times before. But how do you win the fight against Herring? I mean, what have you got a game plan? Is there any different tactics if the fight's not going your way?
Spill the beans, Carl. Spill the beans.
Well, there's a few ways. Well,
I don't think he's listening.
I feel like there's a few ways to beat him, and I don't think people just look at our dimensions and think, you know, I'm short, he's tall, I'm going to have to get on him. But I don't necessarily see it like that. I feel like that, although the only real thing he has on his side here is his height and his physicality and his size. I feel like my feet are better than his. I punch faster than him. My distance control is better than his. I feel like I've got a lot going for me here. And I feel like there's different ways to beat him. I'm not going to give too much away, but there will be times where I have to stand and have a fight. There will also be times where I feel like I could outbox this guy. And something that I've done in the past, and I've done it with taller opponents before, they don't know what to do when a small guy, midget some people call me, a small guy like me starts hitting them with a jab. It really baffles them how they get hit by this, you know, a guy that they're completely outsizing and I'm hitting them with a jab. And I think their game plan falls apart then. So when I start landing my jab on Jamel Herring, due to my distance control and reactions, I feel like he'll not know what to do.
I hear the old Carl Frampton mantra coming out here, Carl. Box when they fight when they box. And that's when you've always been at your very, very best.
Yeah, look, I feel like I know what I have to do to win this fight. And if the game plan that I'm going to try and impose at the start doesn't work, then there's different ways and different game plans that I feel like we'll have to put on this guy. And I feel like that there will be a time in the fight where we have to stand. I feel like that will suit me when we stand and have a fight. I feel like he will stand and have a fight even though he doesn't want to. And the simple reason is his legs aren't what they once used to be. And I think that's a lot down to doing the weight and how big he is. He's got to struggle to make the weight. Doesn't move his feet as much as he should, and I think at a point in the fight he's going to have to stand and have a fight with me, and that's where I'm going to have a lot of success, I think.
Brilliant stuff as always from Carl Frampton. He really is a terrific fella, an amazing boxer. Good luck to him when he meets Jamel Herring. Well then, with all the news about Tyson Fury and the Matchroom series of events that's coming up, Frank Smith joined myself and Spencer Oliver live, and here's what he had to tell us, even though he'd nearly gone to bed and fallen asleep before he joined us on the show. Frank's always great value, and here's what he had to say.
Josh Warrington dumps his IBF belt in the bin, and, you know, is obviously going to fight Lara. We've talked about that earlier in the show. But he's done the right thing, I think, to get this unification fight with Ken Shu.
Yeah, obviously the Lara fight was a fight we had planned and announced, over 2 weeks ago now. And the big fight for him is Kanzu in the summer, or not even in the summer. You know, we're looking at April time for that, or the likes of Gary Russell Jr. as well. So yeah, I think he's done the right thing. And it's one of those things we've been discussing a lot around the position with the sanctioning bodies, and he's made a call that is right for his career.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Two other big questions for you. Eddie Hearn announced on Thursday that he has agreed to a two-fight deal with Saul Canelo Alvarez, which is brilliant news, and also Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua. How is that coming along, Frank?
Yeah, so firstly, the Canelo news, great news, two-fight deal. Obviously, kicking it off with the Avni Yildirim fight on February 27.
Yeah.
And then we're working on his, working to get all the plans together for his fight in May after that as well.
Billy Joe Saunders or not?
Hopeful. That's the one we want. We want to try and make that happen. I think it's the right fight for Billy Joe Saunders. And, fingers crossed we can get that on. And then obviously the second one you mentioned there, the big one, Joshua Fury, which is going in the right direction. Everything is looking good. A bit of work still to be done. But I think all sides are moving in the right direction. And sooner rather than later, we'll see that made.
Frank, we've got stacks of shows now being announced, starting from February the 13th, going right through. We've got February, February the 20th, we've got February the 27th, March the 5th, March the 6th. There's loads of shows going on. Are they all expected to be in this country, Frank, or are you planning to do any of them abroad? And how difficult has it been this second time around in this pandemic?
Yeah, look, I think we thought, I guess a lot of people thought we were coming out of it. When we had 1,000 people at the Joshua fight, that was a good sign of the way things were going, or so we thought. Obviously at the start of January, we had the news that there'd be no boxing in January, which was a shame, but we worked closely with the border control to get that up and running again from February onwards. So Warrington, as you say, Feb 13th, Josh Kelly, Avanesian, great fight we're looking forward to on Feb 20th. March 6th is the Dillian White, Alexander Povetkin rematch. And then March 20th, Akoli Glowacki. April 10th, Conor Benn returns against Vargas. So, a real strong lineup of cards coming. And the plan is for those to happen in the UK. There's been some discussions about Povetkin, White taking place abroad, which, could happen, but I think more than likely that's going to be in the UK as well. Our aim is to keep things moving, and as soon as we can get people back in, we will do.
Frank, just going back to Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury, which, as Spence and I were talking about at length earlier, it's kind of one of those fights that's so big, it allows, and the Canelo fights are very big as well, it allows an entire schedule to be set around them, if you know what I mean, because the way that our sport is structured, you get these huge peaks. Do you see anything getting in the way? And I've noticed both Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua, we're not getting that kind of silly little leak of this or silly little leak of that. Can you verify for us tonight? Can you certify for us tonight on TalkSport, on Fight Night, with myself and Spencer Oliver, that we are definitely moving ahead and there won't be delays and we will get that contract, T's crossed, I's dotted, by the end of the month?
I'm not going to guarantee you 1,000,000% anything, but I can say it is moving very much, as I said, in the right direction. Both parties want it. There's been lots of discussion. We're going to work on those agreements and get those together. The work, I think, really starts after that point, early February, when we start putting together the site proposals, the broadcaster proposals. Mm-hmm. And, I'd really like to hope by the end of February we have everything in place, that being a date, a site, broadcaster's agreements. There's a lot of work still to be done, even when we agree the initial contract. There's still a lot to be done. But I'm very, very positive that we can get that fight on, for sure, May, June time.
Frank, is it possible that we could see this fight going across different broadcasters, is my first question. And how likely is it that this fight will be abroad as opposed to in this country because of the pandemic, no crowds I know that you've had offers coming in from all around the world, you know, Middle East, Australia, China, Singapore, but is it quite likely that this first fight will go ahead abroad and the second fight we would be hoping to get back in this country maybe later on in the year?
Yeah, look, I think it is a struggle at the minute. We'd love to do 100,000 people at, you know, the national stadium, but I just can't see that happening. I can't see us getting to full arenas anytime this year, if I'm completely honest. So, you know, I think in the first instance, we, as you mentioned there, we've had a lot of approaches from a lot of different territories interested in staging this fight. And, you know, we've come under pressure from fans who say it's got to be in the UK, we should do it in the UK, but at the same time, we have to do the best for both the fighters' careers. You know, we represent Anthony Joshua, and we have to do the best for him. So I think that the first fight will end up in the outside of the UK, and then, you know, we'll see what happens with the second fight. But, you know, our aim is to get the fight on, and if that means it takes place in Timbuktu, but people get to see it, I think that's good for the sport still.
Yeah, no, and about the broadcast. Sorry, I was just going to say about the broadcasters as well.
I think there's, as I say, there's work to be done there. I do think there's opportunity for a number of different broadcasters to show it. You know, it's a very complex situation. You know, each side has got partners they work with for a long time and have supported, you know, the fighters up to this point. But, yeah, I can see it working that way. We've seen it on many occasions before, mainly with US broadcasters, where the likes of HBO and Showtime have worked together. Mm. You know, on this occasion, we've got Sky Sports and BT. You've got ESPN and DAZN. So, you know, we'll start working through those details once we get, you know, the initial contract together and agreed.
Well, our thanks to Frank Smith for joining us this week. It was a bumper show, as I said. So next up was Josh Taylor, the two-belt holding champion in the light welterweight division, who is looking to fight Jose Ramirez for a undisputed title at light welterweight this year, possibly in May. And the Tartan Tornado tore into, not us, but into everyone who challenges him, particularly Mr. Ramirez, who he thinks he beats handily. Here's what Josh had to tell us.
It is the one and only Josh Taylor. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, lads. How are yous?
Yeah, all good,
like
Josh. Thanks, mate.
I like hearing that pound for pound introduction. I like that.
Should you be above Tyson Fury?
Listen, I don't really know. You know, it is what it is. I'm not really bothered, but I just like being regarded as, you know, and I like hearing pound for pound, so I'm not really too fussy. But once I whip Ramirez, I'm definitely above him.
For those listening who don't know Josh Taylor, who is a brilliant person and an even more brilliant boxer, a developing fighter, 17-0 in his career, a unified light welterweight champion. He is looking at an undisputed 140-pound title with a fight with a guy called Jose Ramirez, who is... Stop laughing, Spencer. I like to roll my R's. Porque yo hablo español y tú no entiendes ni una palabra, Spencer Oliver. Because Bob Arum promotes, and Bob will be on later and we'll talk to him, because Bob promotes both Josh and Jose, we're looking at that fight sometime maybe in May and June this year. Are you hearing that yourself, Josh?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be about May time. Obviously, we haven't heard anything officially or anything like that, but that's just all the rumours that are going around that are looking like May. So, yeah, we think it's going to be then. So, we're looking forward to it. So, I'm already been in the gym. I've been in the gym constantly anyway. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it. I'm nice and fit. And, yeah, I can't wait to get going. I've never been so motivated, to be honest. So, yeah, I just can't wait to get... the green light and just crack on with sparring full steam ahead. Yeah, and let's go. Can't wait.
Yeah, Josh, we're looking for the unification here against Jose Ramirez, who's 26-0,
well,
17
KOs. I think Josh is... Go ahead, Spence. I just thought Josh went underwater then for a moment, but you carry on.
No, yeah. So anyway, before we got interrupted, Josh, Jose Ramirez, 26-0, 17 KOs. He's the other champion in the weight. Now, I studied him a little bit, actually. I think he's very flat-footed. Yes, he's a great fighter. He switches to the body well, switches the head. But I think your speed of hand and speed of movement, I think you win that fight. And I think you win it quite comfortably, actually. If you do that, Josh, and you come through that fight, would you ever be looking at going up to mix with the bigger names, the people like the Errol Spences, the Terence Crawfords, you know, the pound-for-pound stars? Would you look to go up to that weight? Because you're bigger at super lightweight as well, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's the goal. You know, once and like you said, I do 100% believe I'm going to win this fight. I've watched Ramirez a hell of a lot, and you know, I just don't see he does anything better than me at all in every department.
Yeah,
I'm better than him in every department. Boxing IQ certainly, but that's just no question. Boxing IQ, boxing on the back foot, boxing on the front foot. Fighting, I believe I'm a better fighter than him as well. I don't believe he's fighting inside games that good either. You know, I just think I've got the beating him of him in every department. You know, I really think it's down to me and the way I take this fight on and the way I decide to fight. I think it's down to me in terms. I think it's my fight to lose. You know, in terms of the way I fight. You know, I think it's my fight to lose really, but. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and disrespect him. I think he's a great fighter. He is a very good, great fighter. You know, you don't become unified world champion for no reason. So I'm not going to sit here and, you know, badmouth him and slag him off because I do respect him. He's got to where he is and he's done well and he's unbeaten. So I'm not going to badmouth him. I've got respect for him, but I just believe I win that fight hands down. And then, sure. Yeah, after I've beat him, you know, I've got nothing left really to prove. At the weight, you know, I've got the four belts. I've beaten everybody. It's been put in front of me. You know, my last four opponents are over 100 wins and one loss. And you know, so I've done a hell of a lot in my last four or five fights. So I've really got nothing else to prove at 140. It would be to go up and you know, and challenge and prove myself at 147 and hopefully become a two-weight world champion.
Yeah, Josh, you were talking about, you know, styles, and it was this Ramirez fight would be there for you to lose if you got it tactically wrong. But I want to take you back to the Regis Prograis fight when you won the World Boxing Super Series. I was at ringside for that fight. And by the way, that was, for me, fight of the year and one of the best fights I'd actually witnessed live. The boxing IQ from both of you guys in there and the toughness that you both showed was incredible. I think that you can box as well on the front foot as you do on the back foot. You proved that because a lot of people think you're more of a stylistic fighter than a guy that can actually sort of bite down on his gum shield. But you proved in that fight that you like to mix it up as well as box on the outside. So I don't think that Ramirez brings anything to the table that could actually beat you, mate. And I think that your real test would come up at welterweight.
Yeah, I don't think I think that's where I'm best when I'm in mid to close range. That's where I'm most dangerous. But then I can mix it up. I can go in the back foot. I can be stylistically. I can be style. I can sharpen it up. I can box on the back foot and just box, you know, and be smart. But you know, I think I really can do it all, really, Spence. You know, and yeah, I do feel I'll be much more suited up at 147 as well. You mean, I'm making 140 totally comfortable at the minute as well. I'm not really. Like that last fight there with Kongstong, my mandatory, that was the easiest I ever made weight, you know, since I bring in a nutritionist on board. And, you know, I just breezed away. It wasn't an issue at all. So I feel I could possibly be a career 140-pounder. But once I beat Ramirez, there's not really much else to prove at that weight, you know. So it'd be going up to 147 and, you know, chasing your likes of your Crawford, your Errol Spences and stuff. And I call it the sexy division, you know, because the pool of talent that's in that division and the money that's floating around in that division at the minute as well is just unbelievable. So it's real appealing to me, and I call it the sexy division. The real big fights are up at that weight, you know, and career defining and legacy defining sort of fights as well.
One of the things, Josh, I was thinking about is that the fight is most likely to take place in America because they can have a crowd there. I mean, Bob Arum had mentioned going to Edinburgh, but it doesn't look likely that we're going to be able to, you know, go to the castle or have a big crowd. So you'll probably go to America. And as I said, when I was giving you a glowing testimony at the beginning of this segment, I think that you've got the opportunity not just to be a great boxer, but to become a star as a sportsman. I've known you a long time, and you know, I'll never forget your disappointment in the London 2012 Olympics, and I'll also never forget your success at the Glasgow Commonwealth Games, where your fists were clenched and your grin was from ear to ear because you knew you'd captured a goal that you'd set yourself. This guy, Jose Ramirez, I think is a really tough fight, and because, as you say, he's undefeated, he's in America, but is it not a massive opportunity to make your name in America with this fight in a year when people are looking for these undisputed fights?
Yeah, 100%. I've said this in my interviews that I've had about this fight recently as well, that I actually prefer this fight to be in America because it's the fight dreams are made of, you know. And when you're sitting thinking and visualising you becoming world champion or fighting, it's always fighting in America in either the MGM Grand with your name up in bright lights, or, you know, in Madison Square Garden. You know, these the mecca of boxing. You know, you dream of it in these places. So for it happening in Las Vegas or Madison Square Garden, wherever it may be, stateside, that's it's a dream fight, and it's my dream come true. So yeah, I'm absolutely delighted that it's sort of going to be over in America, most likely. I just hope that the borders and everything, the lockdown restrictions are eased up a little bit, and I can take a little bit of a travelling support with me as well. You know, it would be awesome to bring fans with me as well to that fight too, and make it even more memorable, not just for me, but for my fans that are coming over to watch and support me as well.
Sure. Josh, you go over to America, you make a statement, you beat Ramirez, because that's what I believe you do. I just think that your style's all wrong for him. I think you're too quick hand, too quick foot, and I think that you'll make a big statement there. You know, you've travelled the world as an amateur, so that won't be like a strange environment for you to go in. But if you go over there and make that statement, you win the fight, unify the titles, you move up. What's the most sexy fight for you up at welterweight? You said that's where the division is, that's where the big money is, the Terence Crawfords, the Errol Spences. I mean, who would you most like to challenge out of those guys?
Yeah, I'd love to fight Terence Crawford. You know, everybody's saying he's the best for best, the best pound for pound fighter out there. You know, he was the last undisputed champion at 140. So if I can win these belts against Ramirez and move up to 147 and fight Crawford and then beat him, you know, that's a massive legacy fight. You know, I've also got my hero up there as well, Manny Pacquiao. To share a ring with my hero Manny Pacquiao would be another dream come true. You know, just it's just the fights and options that I've got out there at the minute are just they're almost limitless. There's no limit to the options that I've got now. They're all going to be big fights, no matter what. But I really do believe I'm winning this fight against Jose Ramirez, and then the next step is to hopefully move up in weight class. You know, I might have to take care of my mandatory and Jack Carroll first. Give him a shot, like, because as he promised to wait for this fight as well, so we have to do that first, see what happens, and then we move up in 147 and go for a second weight world title.
Josh, when I came to see you in camp with Ben Davison, who I think we will hear from later in the show, I caught up with Ben a couple of days ago when I came down to Harlow there and saw you in camp before you sent Apinun Konsong back to Thailand with a first round incredible knockout that night. It was a brilliant performance against a very, very heavy-handed, dangerous puncher. I remember Ben being quite concerned about his heavy hands, so he was delighted that you put in a very early shift, a very quick shift in that fight. You and I spoke, and you know, Spencer's pushing Terence Crawford, and Errol Spencer's a very big welterweight. Terence Crawford, like you, will have come up the weights. You know, he went up from lightweight. I remember being in Scotland when he beat Ricky Burns, and we were thinking, wow, this kid from Omaha, Nebraska, is very talented and very cool, very slick. I would love to see you fight Manny Pacquiao, because it might be a chance, if you could get the whole of Scotland to come to it, to bring this huge name at the right time for you to fight him. And he's not one of the biggest welterweights in the world. And it's a real legacy-defining fight for me, for you, in terms of how big he is in terms of name. And you and I spoke about that day, and I know you want to fight the very best, and Pacquiao is obviously amongst them, but It's a big one again to project yourself with. And you and I spoke about Manny at length.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to fight my hero. You know, he's I named my dog after him. You know, it's just to share a ring with him would be an honour. But you know, obviously you're going in there to win and hurt him up and beat him up. So yeah, I'd love to fight him, and if I could get that fight in Scotland at Edinburgh Castle or Easter Road, that would be absolutely brilliant. You know, that'd be the bucket list completely ticked off. You know, after I've fought Terence Crawford, beat Terence Crawford, fight Manny Pacquiao, that'd be my bucket list completely ticked off. There'd be nothing left for me to do in boxing in terms of proving myself and wanting to do. I could happily retire after that and go and enjoy the rest of my life. But knowing me, I want to keep fighting and keep fighting because I'm a born fighter. You know, I'll fight anybody. I'd fight my shadow if I could.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Then joining us from the United States was this an extraordinary female boxer, Clarissa Shields, already a three-weight world champion, a double Olympic gold medalist, only 25. I remember meeting her at the Olympic Games in 2012. I think she was 16 then. She was a great talent even then. And Clarissa had a bit of fun with Spencer and I on the show. Here's what she had to say. Well, you know what? I got to say this as well. I am looking at a picture of you in 2012 with Vice President then Joe Biden. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. I was right. It was right after the Olympics, and I had just met him. He was a fan of boxing.
Look, you have an extraordinary life behind you. You're still only 25. I remember your debut as a pro as well on the night. Amir Khan got poleaxed. I think it was that night. I think it was that night. Or was it Kovalev Ward? No, I think it was Amir Khan Canelo, wasn't it? It was Kovalev Ward. And you had, you had Hagler Hearns with a friend of mine, Franchon Cruz de Zern, that night. It was unreal. Do you remember that fight?
Yeah, that was one of my toughest fights that I've had in the pro so far, is against Franchon Cruz, our pro debut.
One of the things that has happened to you is, and I've seen you from time to time at different events as well, you have become almost like a symbolic figure in America for women's boxing. You are an extraordinary star over there, and yet you're still so young. How do you handle it all? How do you handle all that attention, Clarissa?
Well, I just kind of take it with like a grain of salt. Like, I know why people acknowledge me. I know why I'm a hot commodity. I just try to stay grounded and just try to, accept the people, praising me and, thinking I'm great and stuff. But I just try to keep fighting the best fighters, stay in the gym, stay training, just, making more goals for myself. Like, nobody knows my ultimate goal in boxing. Nobody knows, like, what. Like, when I get done, everything that I want to do, people don't know that yet. They just see, like, oh, I'm a three-time division world champion, the fastest in history. Oh, I got 2 Olympic gold medals. I'm a 9-time world champion. They see that, but they don't see that I want to be, you know, I want to be 51-0. Like, I want to be Floyd Mayweather's record. You know, like, that's the kind of stuff that I see in my near future.
If you keep boxing, you're 10-0 at the moment, of course, undefeated. If you keep boxing that long and you fight 4 times a year for 7, 8, 9, 10 more years, and I know you want to, you will be there. I tell you something you need to do, and you will recall it from 2012. There are a hell of a lot of boxing fans in the UK, and I'm sure on your social media you notice how many boxing fans you have in the UK. Come to the UK and fight Savannah Marshall, please.
That is something that I had a conversation with Eddie Hearn about the day that I beat Hannah Rankin. He promised me that fight. He told me, he was like, I'll beat Savannah Marshall. I said, you do that for me, I love you forever. Because that's a fight that I want. I don't know where this picture is being painted that I don't want to fight her or that I'm running from her. I think she's painting that picture in her own head because she's scared of me. But there's no way in the world that I have any fear toward her. Like, I would love to fight her. And when me and my team reached out to her team last year, they had told us that Savannah Marshall wasn't ready. They had said that she needed to become a world champion first and get more boxing experience, which kind of blew me away because I'm like, how does she need more boxing experience if she's the one that beat me in the amateurs? Mm. You can be saying that I need more boxing experience.
Clarissa, you had an incredible career as an amateur. You won the London 2012 Games gold medal. You won a gold medal again in Rio in 2016. World Championships twice. Incredible career as an amateur. Turned pro and you've done what you've done as a pro. Savannah Marshall remains the only girl ever to beat you, amateur or pro. Now she's won that world title. How likely is it that we'll see that fight? And would you be happy to come to England to make that fight happen as well?
The fight is very likely to happen. You know what I'm saying? And what we got to realize that I'm the A side. So if my team want me to fight in America, I fight in America. And if we see it's a bigger, if we see that it's better for my brand to go over there and fight in the UK, we'll go over there and fight in the UK. It's never been a problem with me going to somebody else's country and beating them. I've done that plenty of times. And I just think that Savannah Marshall lives off the fact that, you know, she got a win over me when we were, you know, in the amateurs. But also, that was 8-9 years ago. And, you know, she should be ashamed of herself saying that she can beat me now. And she's only a 1-time world champion. Like, I'm a 9-time world champion in 3 different divisions. Like, if you're so good and you're so much better than me, how come you're not fighting the girls that I fought and taking their belts? How come I'm the only one doing all the work? That's what I have to say to her. But she knows that I want to fight with her. And the thing is, I'm going to avenge my loss. As soon as she gets in the ring with me, I'm going to avenge my loss in a major way. And hopefully I can put all this talk that she's doing and all her fans to rest, because Savannah Marshall is not a better fighter than me. And I've proven that. She beat me 3 months before the Olympics 2012. I won the Olympics 3 months later. I won the World Championships 2014. She was there. She didn't medal. I won the World Championships 2016. She was in 4th place, bronze medal. I won the Olympics, again, 2016. She was at all these major tournaments and still could not get past C-level and B-level fighters to be a gold champion. So, you know, she lived off of that, but everybody knows that in reality, I'm the one that put in the hard work. I'm the one that beat the champions to become a champion. And that's why I've reigned in at 168 pounds. I reigned at 160. And now I'm reigning at 154. And I can go to either one of those weights and call out the best girls and beat them. She can't do that.
I'm hearing the T-Rex that I love now. This is the Clarissa Shields that I love. We've got to let you go. Just tell me this final thing. And one shouldn't ask a lady about her weight, obviously. But how easily... exactly. But how... Look... for those listening to the show, you know, it's a very wide show in the UK, and not everyone's fight fans that's listening. There's people all over the country listening to this. Super middleweight is 168 pounds that we call 12 stone. Middleweight is super middle is 168. you go down to 160, you go down to 154. Are you having to take on special dietary things and live in a certain way, Clarissa, to keep to that weight? Because you're a tall woman as well. You're a very powerful woman as well. You're 5'8". Is it a massive discipline to keep yourself down at that weight?
It's not a massive discipline, and I just call it like a lifestyle. I'm a pescatarian. The only meat I eat is fish, a lot of rice, you know, grains. And for the fight, March 5th on pay-per-view, Fight TV, I'm fighting at 154. And it's not going to be hard to make that because I walk around now at 170, 168. And really, it depends on which fight I have next on how much I walk around at. So if I have a fight at, you know, 168, I walk around at 175. If I have a fight coming up and it's at 154, I walk around at 168. It's all about just having a good diet, cutting off the time that you eat, and drinking lots of water. And that's something that I do every single day.
Well, from Clarissa Shields, the 89-year-old legendary promoter Bob Arum, who has promoted the top boxers in the world for the last 50 years, joined us. He is, of course, Tyson Fury's promoter in America at the moment. We caught up with him about Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua and whether that fight is truly going to be made in the next few weeks. And here's what Bob had to tell us about a range of things. Well, talking about allies around the world, Bob, what's the latest from you on Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury, which is a truly global contest?
Well, I heard from Eddie. I talked to Eddie. I think it was yesterday, and Eddie will have Joshua people will have the first draft of the contract to us on Tuesday, and then I will circulate it to Queensbury, to Frank, to Tyson, and to the various lawyers. And we'll then get back to Eddie with our comments. And I really believe that this is pretty much of a no-brainer because everybody are professionals and want this to happen. And so I think shortly we'll be able to tie this up and then jointly select the site for the match.
Bob, without wanting to go into the tooth comb details in this or wanting to largesse with the legalese, because that's what it is, Eddie was saying in a call with a few of us the other day that sometimes these contracts, like you say, the draft on Tuesday, they can go back 5, 6, even 10 times sometimes in a fight of this magnitude because there are tiny little things that need ironing out and that's why it takes so long. Is that correct?
Yeah, and particularly since we're different time zones, we're in different parts of the globe, and we have to do everything, thank God, with emails. You know, when I first started, it would take forever because we'd have to put the drafts in the mail and then get it back. It was horrible. But now, with emails, Eddie is quite right. When we get the draft, we'll have our input and send them back a red line copy. They then will study it, send us back a copy, and within a week or two, we'll have a complete meeting of the minds. I'm very confident, and we'll get a document that the applicable parties can sign.
Yeah, Bob, we spoke to Frank Smith at Matchroom earlier on in the show. He said that you were all parties were quite close to getting the deal done, and then it was down to location. Now, it didn't sound like it was going to happen in England because of this pandemic and no crowds being allowed. We don't think it's going to happen in America either. He said there's been other offers coming in from China, Singapore, but most likely the Middle East was going to be the venue. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. The fight doesn't belong in the United States. Besides, our pandemic isn't over, and we can't get full crowds. But again, the appropriate place would have been the United Kingdom, but with the restrictions and the uncertainty, we're looking for a site someplace else around the world, be it the Mideast or in Asia. And I'm sure that once we get this document signed, that we'll jointly be able to select the site and get it announced.
Bob, I'm trying to remember a detail now. You told me once, was it for the Hearns-Hagler fight or the Hagler-Leonard fight? You literally flew the guys to an airport and you flew to the same airport and you did the fight in the airport lounge. Is that right?
Yeah, that's how we used to do it. Remember, we didn't, not like everybody today, you know, they just press a button and it goes out on email and you get it signed and so forth. We had to do that. We had to have meetings in airport lounges to get the damn contract signed. You're absolutely correct. I mean, it's not only, I mean, that was the norm rather than, you know, for a big fight, not necessarily an airport lounge, but to get together and actually get the signing done.
There's a couple of housekeeping things I want to ask you. What next for Teofimo Lopez? Is there any chance he fights Ryan Garcia, by the way?
Well, maybe. I mean, I'm back in L.A. from Las Vegas in my house in L.A., and I hope to talk and get together with Oscar and Eric, Oscar De La Hoya and Eric Gomez, and yes, we'll discuss that. That, to me, Teofimo and Ryan Garcia would be, right under Fury and Joshua, would be a massive fight, particularly here in the United States. Each of the guys have big, big fan bases. The pay-per-view revenue would be outstanding. So, yeah, it can happen. But again, we haven't, really discussed it seriously as of yet.
Bob, that lightweight division at the moment has really caught fire, hasn't it, with Devin Haley, WBC champion, Gervonta Davis is around there as well, Teofimo Lopez, Vasily Lomachenko as well. I mean, we could see some real great fights there. We could even see like a Super Six style type competition with these guys, couldn't we, moving forward? I mean, they're all excellent fighters.
Yeah, but the fight, I talked with Teofimo the other day. He called me. I called him to congratulate him on being selected as the Fighter of the Year by the Boxing Writers Association. And we discussed opponents and so forth. And his dream would be to fight the winner of Ramirez and Josh Taylor sometime next year. Realizing that the winner of that fight has an obligation to fight Jack Cottrell, and then Teofimo would love to fight because he would then be, I think, maybe the first man in the modern era to have been a unified champion of two different weight classes, if he won that fight. And I advise Josh that the fight with Ramirez would be in the United States and would take place in early May. And so I had to get him busy getting his visa and all that sort of stuff, because they told me that Josh wants to arrive in the United States at least a month before that fight, and wants to train in our gym, same gym, of course, that Tyson Fury trained him.
Well, one of the things Bob talked about, of course, was Teofimo Lopez and who he might fight next, the number one in the lightweight division. And consequently, we were joined by Ryan Garcia, who recently beat Luke Campbell. And Bob had mentioned Ryan Garcia, and Garcia is a rising star in the sport. We caught up with Ryan from his home in California.
Get this right. Spencer Oliver, who's my co-host tonight, right? Former boxer. He's a brilliant character. He's saying how much his daughter as a teenager loves you, all right? So I put it to him. How would it be, Spencer, if your daughter brought Ryan Garcia home? And he said, you know what? I'd probably have to tuck him into bed. You know?
I said, what I said was, after what I see with you doing to Luke Campbell, who, by the way, is an incredible little fighter, after I seen that, if Ryan Garcia come around my house, you'd probably have to tuck the kid in. I said, because this boy can fight.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Luke Campbell, like you said, he's a hell of a fighter. That's hilarious.
Man, do you know what, Ryan, there was a lot of question marks over whether you was the real deal, you know, because you had this social media presence and you're a good looking kid and you're looking at your record and there was no real names in there that were sort of like the top tier of the lightweight division. So there was a lot of question marks. Luke Campbell was a massive test, and I think a lot of people felt that Campbell was going to turn you over that night, and you went out there and you displayed an incredible boxing display. And I love the fact that you actually, you know, you got caught with a shot, you went over, you recovered, you went back to this corner, you totally focused, showed a lot of maturity. And do you know what? I think it was a brilliant performance, and you established yourself as front runners in a packed lightweight division. Brilliant performance.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that a lot. And you're right. You know, there was a lot of questions leading up to the fight. And it was kind of things that I've kind of had my whole career. Often a lot of people would, put me down in a way before I got to the opportunity to show who I really am in the ring. And I think I took a lot of that in the ring that night. And I used that for my determination and my will to succeed. Because growing up, even, you know, as a kid, people would always say that I was I would bite off too much that I can chew. So I've always had that kind of chip on my shoulder. So I'm just happy that I finally got to prove who I really am.
Ryan, I said it on the night working with DAZN that, wow, Ryan Garcia's coming on the throne here like Tyson Fury did in February against Deontay Wilder. He is making a massive statement because, you know, hubris is a word that often comes into effect when someone's really putting themselves out. You put yourself out there, you took your first knockdown, you got up like a champion, and you came up with that equalizing power to stop Luke Campbell. But in that one performance, and we heard it from Bob Arum, the brilliant, legendary Bob Arum, who was just on the show before you came on, he's talking about you fighting Teofimo Lopez now. In my view, do you agree that you have become the golden ticket for everyone else in the lightweight division?
You know, in my career, a lot of people, like I said, it's been a story my whole career. I've always had the hype, the fame around myself. And after my fight with Luke Campbell, I think it solidified myself as, the golden ticket in order to fight me. You know, it's going to take, it would be a blessing, as in, like, money-wise, financially-wise. I know that in my heart, I still want to fight the best fighters out there. You understand what I'm saying? But I do also understand that I can bless a lot of people through fights with me. So I'm in a predicament where my love for the game is enormous. I want to fight Teofimo Lopez. I want to fight Gervonta Davis. I want to fight the best fighters out there. But now it's all about being aware, but knowing that I fight for other people other than myself. You know, I fight for the fans. I fight for my family. I fight for everybody that supports me back home. So I have to be strategic, but I also know I will always stay true to myself. I want to fight the best, and if it has to be Teofimo, I will also fight Teofimo.
You gave me a wonderful interview before you fought Luke Campbell on Zoom where you said you understand the responsibilities for the generation of 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 25-year-olds, and to follow their dreams and don't listen to people that say you can't do things. Now, how did you get so many Instagram followers? Can you remember the avalanche? And does Mum Lisa vet all the girls that are chasing you at the moment?
You know, it's funny. It's hilarious because I always had a feeling in my heart. For some reason, that social media was a big part of the game, even before it was a big part of the game. So I kind of knew that I needed to use that as a tool. It's just more of a knowing because I grew up in that generation. So it was a priority for me already. And then one day I just did a video and it blew up. And obviously I didn't let go of that opportunity. I understood it and I continued to do it no matter what people said. You know, people said that's going to mess you up or it's just going to be a distraction. But I knew that I could handle it and it paid off. So, you know, social media was just a thing that I used to connect to my fans. I used it to connect to the generation that I'm talking about. I'm trying to be a good example as a champion to this younger generation. And I think that's been missing a long time. Somebody other than Manny Pacquiao, right, as a great example to once you get to the top, right, a lot of people like to forget how they got there and they don't share their story. And they don't give glory to God. I mean, ultimately, that's how you got there and how I believe. So I will always stay true to myself and I will try to be the best example I can be for this younger generation.
Yeah, Ryan, I was going to ask how much pressure, you know, having that social media presence and stuff like that and people, you know, going into that last fight with Campbell, just use that as an example. How much pressure does that put on you having such a big social media presence and people not maybe recognizing you for your boxing skills but more for your social media presence? Does that put a big bit of pressure on you going into a fight of that magnitude?
I think I would be lying if I didn't say that it put pressure on me. I mean, it's quite obvious. It puts enormous pressure on me. I mean, every time I get in the ring, I have thoughts like, man, I really like boxing. You know what I'm saying? And it's because of the pressure that's put on me. And I mean, I have times in the locker room, I'm like, do I really want to do this? Like, this is horrible. You know what I'm saying? But then I take it as in, like, it goes both ways. Then I say, you know what? You know, I have all this for a reason. You know, this pressure can make me into a diamond if I'm able to handle it. So I kind of use that as fire. Like, okay, I got this pressure on me. I put in the hard work. That's why I work so hard. So the work will come out. So I'm just going to trust in that, trust in God, and go for it. So it goes both ways. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's what champions do.
Absolutely. One of the things that fascinates a lot of us about you is, you know, and I got to interview you in your home the other day on Zoom, and you talked about how normal you are as well, and there's this weird gift inside. You know, you're angelic looking. You know, you're a very handsome young person who people wouldn't imagine. You could stand at the end of a bar, and people would never go, that guy's a fighter over there, but something comes over you. How does Ryan Garcia, apart from going on hot boxing with Mike Tyson and getting Tyson to call up Tank Davis and you wind him up on the phone, which was a brilliant show, and if you haven't seen that, anyone listening, go and watch it because it was very funny. And Garcia is spitting bullets on the day. You got very excited. How do you chill out, Ryan? What do you do? You know, what are the parameters of things you can do outside the gym that you can actually go out there and chill out? What do you do?
You know, it's a mixture of a lot of things. It's a mixture of being with family, friends. It's a mixture with finding a way how to use the blessing I have for good. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people out there hurting. What I've seen getting more and more to the top is that why forget? I mean, I remember coming from where I came from. And I remember hurting, and there's still people hurting. So that's what gives me, I guess, that's what keeps me calm. You know, that knowing that I have an opportunity to help people out there that need help, and I could do it. I have the blessing to do it. So it's kind of just finding my way in that, you know, finding a charity that I would want to get involved with, finding, I guess, just things to be involved with to help the people that I know are in the situations because I was in the situation. And I think that helps me outside the ring because when my back is against the wall, like say Gervonta Davis calls or you know, my lion comes out, my fire, you know, it's something that, you know, I just, it's different. You know what I mean? I mean, you've seen it a couple of times and I told you about this, like, instead of being like, it's not nervous, it's fire. You know what I'm saying? It's like, ooh, let's go. Like, I'm ready to do this.
Ryan, when you walked away from the ring against after beating Luke Campbell, it's very interesting. I watched Saul Canelo Alvarez talking in your ear very seriously. Stop laughing at my Spanish. Podemos hablar en español si quieres, Ryan, porque mi co-host está riendo de mí porque hablo español. Listen, Spence, shut it, zip it, yeah, come on. Let me speak Spanish with the kid, you know? when you walked away with Canelo after the victory against Campbell, Canelo was very seriously talking to you about things, and it was like he was immediately pointing out things to you that maybe weren't right in the ring. Is that right? And is that a massive help for you?
Yeah. He's like what you would call a big brother. If he first tells you what you did wrong, and then he tells you how proud he is of you. So
that's amazing.
The first thing he said was, "Oh, you got caught because of this." And the obvious reason we understand because we're boxers. So obviously he was like, "Ryan, this, that," and I was like, "Yes, you're right." I just obviously lost concentration for a split second. I mean, Campbell was a great fighter. He caught me on the chin, would knock out any. I mean, that shot would put it down. I'm sure most 135 pounders. I mean, that shot was on the chin. Luke Campbell, they say he's not a hard punch. Come on, man. That man has snap. He caught me on the end of his shot. That's where his power really comes from, is on the end of the shot. So he caught me with his full power, his full, you know, it was a great shot. Just what else can I say? It was a great shot. And so Canelo obviously told me why I got hit. But then he also said how proud he is of me. He said, "I'm proud of you. Like, I'm going to miss this." Like he was saying, "I'm going to miss this boxing game when I leave." He just was saying that, like, I'm going to miss this. And he was just so proud. Like a big brother, he was so proud.
Listen, it's lovely to have you on the show tonight, Ryan. Spencer and I were really looking forward to speaking to you. You have just described the mark of a champion there, someone that doesn't walk away with their success, but walks away realizing what they've learned about it. And that, as Spencer knows, because he's been there and done it, is the mark of a guy who will continue to learn. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on, and we look forward to talking to you, documenting your career and your extraordinary life.
Yeah.
Joining us tonight, Ryan.
Thank you guys so much for having me as well. One thing I want to say to all my fans in the UK, thank you guys. The one thing I also want to say is, you know, for some reason, I've always had a connection to the UK fans because if anybody keeps you honest, it's you guys. So keep being honest. I've always been a fan of the UK fans, which is hilarious. But thank you so much, you guys, for the support. And thank you for keeping me honest. And I just want to say that.
Great stuff there from Ryan Garcia, fascinating young fighter. And a very fascinating young trainer was up next on the show. Ben Davison, of course, who did extraordinary work with Tyson Fury and is now training Josh Taylor and has worked with Billy Joe Saunders and others. Here's what Ben had to say. Ryan Garcia, the lightweight division, Teofimo Lopez, who's the number one at the moment, Vasyl Lomachenko, we don't know what he's doing in the division, but Devin Haney, yes, you're Ben Davison. Devin Haney, Gervonta Davis, Cambosos Jr. It's a very, very exciting division. What did you make of Ryan Garcia's performance against Luke Campbell?
Hard one to put it because I'm trying to think. I was impressed. I was certainly impressed in areas, but I also thought there was some big obvious areas for improvement. But with that being said, obviously he's got a fantastic team around him, which I think he will make those improvements, know what areas to work on. I actually saw a video and it really stood out for me, and this is the difference. This is why I think that I'm confident he'll make those corrections. As he left the ring and was heading back to his changing room. He bumped into Canelo, who was celebrating with Canelo. On the way back, they hadn't even made it back to the changing room, and Canelo was explaining to him where he went wrong, things that he did wrong. They wasn't celebrating what he did right. They was pointing out what he did wrong. That is the difference.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, he's done all the calling out afterwards. Obviously, Devin Haney in the arena and Gervonta Davis afterwards on Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson calling up Tank Davis. I'm sure you saw that. We all did. But he got up when he was knocked down. He proved he's got something. Luke Campbell is a very, very, very good fighter as well. And I think you were watching Garcia a lot, weren't you? Because he made you watch him. And here's my point that I'm trying to get to with you. In that lightweight division, it could be that Teofimo Lopez, Gervonta Davis, and Devin Haney all beat him. But he's still the big draw for all of them because of this extraordinary 8 million followers he's got on Instagram. And I don't say that lightly, that, wow, look, he's got... It just does work that way now. The power of the social media kind of momentum that, you know, that Donald Trump had to get into power, that the American authorities and Twitter had by taking away his 82 million followers from him, by taking his Twitter account away. That Garcia, I've already called him. I called him on my William Hill final round show this week. I called him, he's like the Justin Bieber of boxing. Loads of people hate him. Loads of people hate him because he is Ryan Garcia, because he's King Ryan. He came in on the throne. He gambled like Tyson did against Deontay Wilder. But he lived up to the billing. He got a spectacular body knockout. It was brilliant. He's got an equalizer in those hands. So, and in many ways... Even though those other guys that I just mentioned in the division, including Vasyl, are massive fighters in our sport, within our industry, the wider reach, the success, the mainstream success, the being treated as a star, he's almost the golden goose for all those other guys in many ways, you know?
Yeah, a couple of points there that you made. Like, obviously, like you said, he got knocked down by Luke. There's positives and negatives within what happened in that moment. Obviously, went straight down, ego, young, inexperienced of that happening to him, jumping straight up. But look at the character that he showed. Stepped straight back to Luke. The way he went about it after getting knocked down, that shows a hell of a lot of the type of person he is and the type of character he is in terms of the boxer, Ryan Garcia. What you're talking about in terms of the profile and the... Not character, but it is a character to a degree. You know, you got Tyson Fury, and you got the Gypsy King. They're two different people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so as soon as Ryan Garcia finished the fight, Canelo and the team around is pointing out what he did wrong, not celebrating what he did right. Then he goes back, and exactly like you said, goes straight back to work, doing podcasts on the Mike Tyson thing, building his profile from that. And those are the reasons why, you know, he's working. You know, he's got a successful social media platform, YouTube channel, all these kind of things. And that's all part of work. That's all part of why he's a big name. But he's not just a big name because of that. Because, as you said, you know, you've got to be a good fighter to be able to beat Luke Campbell. And he showed his mettle.
But I'd said going into it, you know this as well, he does hold his chin up very high and his chin's there. For his next opponent, Luke has probably exposed something that they will work on now again and again and again. That his guard is bound to get better now because it has to. It has to. It's as simple as that. Otherwise, he's going to get knocked out by those three I just mentioned. And he might well do. And it wouldn't surprise me if he gets knocked out a couple of times anyway.
Yeah, this is the thing for me. Like, right now, they're all pretty young. At the moment, I would... You know, who beats who as of right now is different to what I would say who comes out on top in a few years. Now, their mentality and how they go about their success will determine who comes out on top.
But that's the $64 million question then. Who is going to come out on top in like 2.5 years? Who do you reckon?
I believe that Devin Haney will, simply because I've seen his mentality. In a moment and in a time where it would have been very easy for him to have got carried away with himself. So I'll give you the story, actually. I was in a gym in Las Vegas. Devin Haney arrived with a big team. Now he's 20 or 21 years old at the time. World champion. Comes into the gym with a full team, big team, sparring two guys. Punches the life out of them. After the sparring, I'm talking to the sparring partners to say, yeah, you could have done this. Maybe you should have done that. In this situation, that happened. You should have done this. Devin Haney, at 20 or 21 years old, after punching up the two sparring partners in front of the gym, already WBC world champion with a full team around him, shouts over, coach, can I get some of that work? So he comes over asking for advice, hungry for advice, wanting to learn. Where can I improve? That mentality, which is the similar type of mentality of what I'm talking about with Ryan Garcia after his fight, he didn't go back and have a load of happy clapping cheerleaders around. Yeah, Canelo Alvarez telling him where he went wrong.
Well, my thanks for Spencer Oliver, Ben Davison, Ryan Garcia, Bob Arum, Clarissa Shields, Josh Taylor, Frank Smith, Carl Frampton, as I say, joining us on a bumper show, and to Spencer, of course, who was great value on the night on our three-hour show. Enjoy the podcast. Listen to us on Fight Night. I'm Gareth Davis, signing out. You've been listening to the TalkSport Fight Night podcast. See you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.